This is Radio Boston.
I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today with another Massachusetts Democrat running for president. Former Governor Deval Patrick officially entered the race this morning. We reached him earlier today while he was on his way to New Hampshire to file his paperwork for the first in the nation primary.
Good morning. Good morning. And thanks for having me. I'm in the car on the way to Concord to file my papers for the primary here.
I imagine it's going to be a very busy day.
It's a busy day and a pretty sober one, I think, as well. And along with all the excitement. You know, I think about what my own journey has been like from the south side of Chicago on welfare to my opportunities to lead as a civil rights lawyer, a business lawyer, as a business person, as governor, and now this, and the ways in which my American dream has been contracting and becoming more and more out of reach for people. And it just seems like this is not a moment to miss.
So let's talk about that moment, because the race has been going on for several months now. There are a lot of candidates who have had a lot of time in primary states to put their name out. Why enter, and why enter so late in the process now?
Well, I think you know, and your listeners do, that I wanted to enter about a year ago, and we'd given it a lot of thought and made a lot of mental preparation, and others were organizing for me. And then my wife, Diane, was diagnosed with uterine cancer, and that just brought our feet back to earth. And that's the attention and the place where my attention belonged. We celebrated our 35th wedding anniversary in May, and I am delighted and relieved to say that she is cancer-free. And we continue to get encouragement to come in, and I continue to wonder whether it was too late. But frankly, in the minds of the voters, I don't think it's late at all. They haven't made up their minds yet. They haven't settled yet, because we're being presented, I think, as the campaign has gone along, with a sort of a false choice between big ideas on the one hand and the healing we're so hungry for on the other.
And among the two dozen candidates who have been in the race, one of the largest pools in history, are you saying you feel like none of them have been able to bring all of that to the table? What do you think you bring that's different?
I think, first of all, as a Democrat, I'm enormously proud of the breadth and depth of this campaign. The policy detail has been just extraordinary. But I think that in the conversation, we're getting so hung up on some of the details that we're forgetting to make the contrast between ourselves and the Republican Party. Take health care, for example. We've been fussing about what Medicare for All means for whom, from a policy perspective, and whether we're for it or against it, when the fact of the matter is the public needs to understand every single Democrat is committed to delivering health care for every single American, and the Republican leadership is not. And beyond that, why are we? Why are we? Because there's a big question, not just of the character of the candidates, that's up in every election, but what is the character of the country? And the leadership we have right now has used the anxiety and anger at large in the land to divide us. And I think we need leadership who can pull us together through the solving of these big problems. And I think I have some experience in doing just that.
What are the key policy issues that you think will most effectively reflect what you think should be the character of the country? Where are you going to focus on policy?
Well, I think we need an opportunity agenda. The very same elements of an emphasis on education, innovation, and infrastructure that creates jobs right now, but also creates economic mobility and a pathway for people to lift themselves and their families to a better life and into a better future. We can shape that. We've seen how to do that in Massachusetts, coming out of the worst recession in living memory. And we've understood how to do it, and there are lots of elements to it. I think we need a broad reform agenda, much of which we've been talking about in the race so far. Health care, to be sure, but also criminal justice, comprehensive immigration reform, a tax reform that, frankly, simplifies the system and gets all the loopholes out and stops skewing all the benefits to a privileged few. And then we need a democracy agenda.
So, Governor, let's grab some specifics there. So some of the proposals on the table in those areas: forgive student debt, free public college education, Medicare for all, billionaires tax. Where are you on those proposals? And do you have other specific proposals you're bringing into the race?
I'm going to be bringing specific proposals within the rubric of both the opportunity agenda, which I discussed, the reform agenda, and also a democracy agenda. I think there are elements of value in each of the proposals that others have made, but I don't want this to be about how we reform in ways that or how we govern to other people or at other people, but how we govern with other people. Part of how you get lasting and meaningful change, in my view, is with some humility that, as good as our ideas are, no one of us and no one party has a corner on all the best ideas. And so I think we have to open ourselves up to what other people bring, so long as we keep our eye on the objective, which is restoring the American dream for everyone everywhere.
Do you have a specific flagship proposal or policy issue as you enter the race that you really want voters to know you for right out of the gate?
I'm going to save that because I don't want it to overtake the overarching theme, because frankly, I think we spend a whole lot of time at launches like these on the how and what the sensational signature proposal is, and not on the why. And I want to make sure that we're focusing on why, not my why, but our why, that this is about us.
Governor Patrick, you said that you've spoken with President Obama about the 2020 race. Did he encourage you to run for president?
Oh, my gracious. As a friend, he, like so many others, have said, good gracious, keep your head down. But as a citizen, he has been encouraging it all along. And he's been as encouraging with me as he has been with the other candidates in the race. He's been very open to all of us, and I have appreciated that. I think that's what he's supposed to do, and not presume to pick a candidate at this early stage. I hope to be able to earn his support and earn the support of lots and lots and lots of people I haven't yet met.
When you spoke with WBUR's Bob Oakes a little less than a year ago, you said that part of the reason not to run was that the process is cruel. Is the process any less cruel today, and do you have any concern about that still?
Sadly, I don't think so, and I am concerned about that. You know, I think the truth is, you know, you sign on, but you drag all the people you love along with you, and they haven't necessarily signed on. But I think it is such an extraordinary moment where the anger and anxiety that I see in so many different parts of the country, different kinds of community is not just justified, but it's familiar. I think when I was running the first time in Massachusetts, I remember how folks in Berkshire County would say they felt that state government was all about the neighborhood around Beacon Hill. And then I remember going to Worcester County and hearing the very same thing. And then to, you know, the South Coast and Cape Cod and hearing the same thing, and up in Merrimack Valley, the same thing, and in Roxbury, the same thing. And what folks didn't realize is that they had that sense of being left out and left back in common. And it was that on which we built the coalition that enabled us to govern. And it was that coalition of all kinds of folks that enabled us to deliver so much of what we were able to do.
As a Massachusetts Democrat, how do you carry that message to a Mississippi, a Texas, Alabama, even Nevada?
It's funny you mentioned some of those places. That is the very message I brought to Texas, to Mississippi, to Alabama, to North and South Carolina and New Jersey, to rural Illinois in the midterms, working alongside Democrats who were running for Congress or for the Senate, 14 different races on nights and weekends. And I'm proud to say that 10 of them won and three of them lost by a hair. And one only had it decided after over a do-over because there was so much fraud on the Republican side. We've stopped trying to talk to everybody everywhere. We've stopped making it about everyone everywhere. And folks feel it. They understand what it means to be talked over and talked about as some voting block instead of a human being and with aspirations and struggles. They understand that. And so I'm trying to make a way for us to reach, if not physically, at least using many of the tools now available to us, everybody everywhere, not just with a set of proposals about what it is we want to do for them, but what we together can do for the country.
I wonder if your time at Bain Capital, and I understand that you just resigned from there this week, makes that quite difficult for you. The Democratic Party right now is one that is rallying around things like a billionaire's tax. Are you out of sync with the base of the party on issues of wealth, income disparity, et cetera, having come from Bain Capital most recently in your work?
Are you kidding?
I'm not.
I think the very rich and the very fortunate should pay more. And I know many of them who want to pay more and think that the system is, you know, over-tilted in their direction. But you know what? This didn't start just in the last couple of years. It got worse in the current administration. But we've been, this is what trickle-down economics, which Ronald Reagan talked about, looks like. This is the result. And we have been governing by slogans like those, slogans like three strikes and you're out, trickle-down economics, even no new taxes for a long, long time. And what I love about what's happening right now among Democratic activists and others of no party is that folks are beginning to have real energy around big ideas that address big problems. And I want to be a part of that.
You have a record as a chief executive of a state, and that will undoubtedly figure into your campaign, both pros and cons. So to start, what do you think is your biggest accomplishment during your two terms as governor of Massachusetts?
I remember getting that question a lot as I was leaving office, and I remember always hating it because it was never for me about just one thing. I'm proud of the fact that we came out of the recession faster than most other states and were first in America in student achievement and healthcare coverage and veteran services and energy efficiency and entrepreneurial activity. I'm glad that the life sciences cluster is now the definitive supercluster on the planet, and that we grew a clean energy sector and showed that there was an economic opportunity and a job creation opportunity in moving toward a carbon-free future. And I'm glad that we were able to do that and more with, you know, responsible budgets and the highest bond rating in the history of the Commonwealth.
Governor Patrick, the Globe has a story today called The Highs and Lows of Deval Patrick's Tenure as Governor. You had some challenging issues during your tenure as well. There was a tragedy at DCF, the scandals at the state drug testing labs, with more than 60,000 drug charges being dismissed. Voters are going to look to the general election even during the primary. Do you have any concern that criticism about those pieces of your record provide Republicans with meaningful material to attack you in a general?
I think experience does matter, and I think that being able to point to not just the things that went right, but the things that went wrong and the ways in which we stepped up to solve those problems is important, because guess what? If I'm president, things will go right and things will surprise us that go sideways. And the question is not whether everything is all rosy or whether you just look the other way when they're not. The question is whether you get in deep and try to solve the problem, not just for the next news cycle or the next election cycle, but for the next generation. And I, in that respect and others, I'm really, really proud of our record.
There's a debate next week on Wednesday. It's too late to qualify for that one. There is a December debate and a series of thresholds, everything from 200,000 unique donors to early state polling thresholds. Do you think you can make the December debate, and is that a goal of yours?
Look, I think that the goal is to meet those milestones for their own sake. You know, I'm not sure that given how well the debates have gone from a format point of view, that it's something that anybody would aspire to. But I get it, and we will do our best. I think more important is to be in situations that we create or that others create that really enable us to inform, that really enable us to listen and to learn from regular voters, from activists, from folks who haven't been and don't want to be engaged in their own civic and political life, and to form solutions that draw them in and that they feel a part of, so that when we have a chance to implement those solutions, they will last.
Governor, will you come back and talk to us again as the race continues?
I'd like that very much.
That was former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, now officially a candidate in the 2020 Democratic presidential primary. WBUR's Fred Tice is in New Hampshire covering the campaign. He joins us now on the line. Hey there, Fred.
Hi, Tiziana.
So, Fred, tell me, what do you make of what we just heard from Governor Patrick?
Well, you know, for one thing, we heard him recount some of the moments of his inspiring life story, starting in on the south side of Chicago and ending up through scholarship at Milton Academy and then eventually as governor of Massachusetts. That's a life story familiar to voters from Massachusetts. It's a story that he told many times. One of the things that I thought was interesting was that, you know, obviously he's got to say this, but it's still worth repeating that for voters, according to him, it is not too late. They've not made up their minds. And, you know, largely he's right. As I go to, I was in with Senator Warren last week, for example, last weekend. There were about 750 people there, very enthusiastic about her. But everyone there had a second or a third possible choice. Folks are still trying to figure out who they're going to vote for.
Fred, he talked a lot about healing. He used that word a number of times. And it makes me think of the terrible tragedy that we're witnessing in California today with another school shooting, including fatalities of young people. Did Governor Patrick take any time out to talk about that or any policy issues that are related to it?
Yeah, indeed. That was the one specific policy proposal that I think I've heard today. And, you know, he said that on gun control, he will push to take away what he calls military-style weapons out of the hands of average civilians.
Fred, what about beyond New Hampshire? What do you make of Governor Patrick's chances elsewhere, and do you think his record as governor will help him or hurt him with that?
So right now he's going to head to California, then presumably for some fundraising, but perhaps for some voter events, then Nevada. And he's going to make his way back east to Georgia. Now, he has been traveling across the country for many years, really, campaigning for candidates, particularly in the South, and in front of African-American audiences, largely. And as you heard him talk about that in the midterms last he did that in the midterms last year. So I think he's going to be in a good place there. Elizabeth Warren has been working very hard to win over African-Americans from Joe Biden and setting up the ground for that. And he could have some trouble from DeVault Patrick, who may be more familiar to many of the voters down there than she is.
Well, we will be watching. That is WBUR's Fred Tice. Fred, thanks for calling in.
Oh, glad to do it, Tiziana.
Stay with us. Coming up, Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch shares his reactions to yesterday's impeachment testimony. Stay with us. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.